Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I love this story that was over at Cleveland.com. Evidently, U.S. Senator, Ohio U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown and 10 Democratic and Independent senators sent a letter to U.S. Trade Rep Katherine Tai asking her to reinstate the tariffs on single-use N95 and KN95 masks, reusable and surgical masks, surgical gowns, and all of the other vital PPE that we need to fight this pandemic, you know, going forward. And, you know, my mind was, why do you need to send this letter? How is it that we're even considering on any level removing those tariffs in this moment? I have no idea why they were ever set to expire until this was over with. But as I said, good on Sherrod Brown, who I'd like to see in the White House one day, caveat aside. But good on him for stepping up and doing this. And here to share some thoughts on, well, should we have these tariffs? What should we be doing? I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is always great to be with you.
So I tell you right up front, a big fan of Sherrod Brown. I would have loved to have seen him run for president, back in 2020. Although the problem is he had a Republican governor in Ohio and couldn't have that. What do you think of this idea that we should keep these tariffs in place?
I'm a big fan of Senator Brown as well, so we share that. He's right about the tariffs. And, you know, I know some people look at tariffs and are like, well, that's very Trumpian and very exclusionary. But they can be wielded as an effective part of an industrial policy to grow well-paying jobs in the United States. And the idea behind the tariffs in the first place was this, that we had a need for making PPE in the United States. We imported a very large percentage of that prior to the pandemic, at the very beginning stages of the pandemic as well. I mean, more than 90% in some categories of PPE. And there, as you know, there were a lot of companies that pivoted. There are lots of entrepreneurs that started up to make PPE because we needed them all over the country. Our healthcare workers, our frontline workers, fire, police, they all need this PPE to do their jobs well, in addition to the need that you have or the need that I have to protect ourselves. And so these companies got launched, and to give them a little space, wanted to put some tariffs into place. However, the large kind of like medical contracting folks lobbied successfully, and have got it so that the tariffs disappeared, and the companies that started up are left hanging out to dry. In fact, some have already laid off some of these folks that they have hired, and we're gonna I obviously feel bad because I want to support people who want to invest in America. But just as important here, Rick, is the fact that we just didn't get the lesson here.
Yeah.
Our public health, our economic security. If we don't make this stuff at home, we're not gonna have that capability. And I'm willing to bet a wager that this is not the last event like this that we're gonna see, unfortunately. And so we have to have that capability, and we're not gonna have it unless we have tariffs to offset some of those super ridiculously cheap goods coming into the United States, aided and abetted by basically medical supply wholesalers in the United States who just want to make a buck.
I think what we need to do is, in this moment, we should be rethinking, redebating, reimagining trade policy. The neoliberal open trade, free trade, that isn't working, has not worked for our country, in my view, hasn't worked for the working people of this country in any way, shape, or form. It's worked, I think, the way it was supposed to. We've created a lot of really rich people, a lot of global wealth. It has done that well. But for our national security, our standard of living, it has not worked out as it was sold to us.
That's right. Well, there's a book that it was written about a decade ago by Josh Bivens at Economic Policy Institute, and the title of it was perfectly encapsulated what you're saying. Free trade, everybody wins except for most of us, and that's exactly right. Even the theory about that there would be the gains would more than offset the losses is wrong. It has not worked that way. And you do have this concentration of wealth and companies simply to make a better margin for their shareholders are closing down perfectly profitable factories in the United States and are moving them overseas. Wages, standard of living, not only for factory workers and other workers who are directly impacted by globalization, but also those in their communities, have declined all over the United States. And so it has certainly made us worse off. And then with these other impacts that we're talking about, it has left us woefully unprepared to respond rapidly to critical needs, like a public health emergency, for instance.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know I'm probably a little further off to the protectionist side of things than you are or most people are, but I think we need to erect capital borders again. I think we need to be strategically looking at things in our national defense that we make here and put massive tariffs on. I say all the time, I'm a protectionist. I'm not an isolationist. I think we trade on the things that we need, the things that we can trade for. But the things that we have to have, I think you have to have domestic production for domestic consumption. And I think the pandemic has really highlighted that position.
100%. And I think that, you know, this is, I want to point out for your listeners that this is not just like a Trump thing or people who don't want to engage with the rest of the world. I mean, the Obama administration used these with respect to solar panels. The Trump continued that policy, and Biden has continued that policy, because they understand that in order to scale up solar in the United States, you need to offset the massive subsidies and the dumping of these products that takes place in countries like China, where the government is basically subsidizing the entire industry there. They don't have to make a profit. They just want market share. So they don't care what price they sell it at in the United States of America. And unfortunately, the solar developers, they're happy to have those cheap goods. It's like getting that fake Rolex off the street. You're like, oh, this is too good to be true. Well, it is. It is too good to be true.
But like that fake Rolex, it's crap.
Yeah. And then there's a bad story behind it too. You know, those solar panels, you know, some of them were made with forced labor, in the Uyghur region in China. And the way in which the polysilicon is produced in that region too, which goes into solar panels, is incredibly toxic and polluting. And so it's not all that's supposed to be here. And so tariffs serve a social purpose, an environmental purpose. They shouldn't be used to drive people apart from each other, which is, I think, unfortunately, one of the things that Trump tried to do. But they can certainly help to foster infant industries in the United States and to defend industries that are vital to our economic security, to our public health, to our national security.
Now, as I said a moment ago, I'm a protectionist, and I admit that. When I leave my house, I lock the door. I'm not an isolationist. I didn't dig a giant moat around my house with a drawbridge and alligators and all kinds of barbed wire. And I think as a country, we've got to think in those terms. We've got to protect our national defense. We've got to protect our national security. We've got to protect our workers. And the workers part of this hasn't been part of the equation for a very, very long time. And I think we need to be talking about that.
That's right. Workers and the public have been left out of trade policy for decades by both parties. And when you put them at the center of the policy, it's going to look a lot different. And just a great visual metaphor for all of this, Rick, you have those 72 boats off of the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach waiting to unload these massive cargoes of imports for Walmart, for Target, for other retailers. And those boats come into the harbor, they're down low because they're weighed down with those imports. When they leave, they're up high because they're not carrying a lot of American goods abroad. And it's because of these imbalances in our trade policy. And so I think you and I are speaking the same language here. We're not talking about literally erecting border around the United States, but we're talking about balance, about giving workers a voice in all of this, and making sure that we have the capacity to make what we need here at home. There's only so much benefit a consumer derives out of having seven cheap t-shirt choices as opposed to five. But there's a lot of benefit if we're making the products we need to rebuild our country, to keep ourselves secure, even if that involves tariffs. And so we should not be afraid of that word or that policy. I completely agree with
you. No, I am certainly not. Now, you brought up our supply chain, and you've got the CEO of Raytheon blaming the Biden administration for their vaccine mandate, saying that it's going to make the supply chain problems worse by mandating that workers have to be vaccinated so that other workers in those facilities don't get sick. And for me, the answer is that's not what's the problem with our supply chain. The problem with our supply chain is we ain't making it here anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the vaccine mandates are going to have a negligible impact on the supply chain. The decisions that these big companies make to offshore their production, to get so lean, to do the just-in-time inventories, and to have a supply chain that's scattered all over the globe contributed to it. So when you have an unexpected event like a public health emergency or a natural disaster or some political risk like China threatening shipping lanes or something like that, it leaves your supply chain in disarray because it's not local, it's not resilient, it's not durable. And the idea that worker hesitancy to get vaccinated is going to disrupt the U.S. economy actually seems counterintuitive because it seems like the large companies that have done this have had some success with it if they've explained it correctly with their workforce. And so I think the key to getting our economy back in a better state is to get past the public health emergency, and getting past the public health emergency means people got to get the shot.
Yeah. No, I've had a bunch of people recently say, you know, you guys are wrong. You've got the wrong take on China, because it's in their mindset that if China collapses and if we defend ourselves and stop letting them eat our lunch, that eventually they're going to collapse and it's going to bring the whole globe down, and then we're going to have a massive war. This is what some have been sold to believe. Is that the reality, that if by standing up for ourselves, China is going to collapse, and the only way out of this is global war?
No, that's not the inevitable conclusion of pushing back against the aggression that the Chinese Communist Party and Xi Jinping in particular are showing right now. I mean, ask the people of Hong Kong how benign China's moves are, or people in Taiwan who feel quite threatened, or the Uyghur population, or the Tibetans for many years now. There are serious human rights abuses. There's serious environmental degradation. And there is also a serious military buildup that we have to take seriously. And I certainly don't hope that it turns into something that looks like the Cold War. But at the same time, The answer to China is just not to turn a blind eye to what is happening. I mean, part of what makes America respected is the fact that we can, you know, rally and be a force for good if we have leaders who believe that as well. And I certainly think that that's part of Biden's agenda here. It's not just this pure commercial calculation with China. It's a lot about our values as a country. And it doesn't inevitably mean conflict with China, but the fact that, you know, you can't ignore it. It's too big to ignore. And that in and of itself is a huge risk to democratic values and to civic freedoms in the Indo-Pacific region. I think that would be an enormous mistake.
I'm more there with you. But, you know, you have this mindset out there that if you stand up for yourself, somehow all this chaos is going to happen. And look, you know, we've been taking a beating for so long. But I also have people going, well, you know, the Chinese just learned from us. They're only doing to us what we've done to other countries. Do you buy that argument?
Well, I the United States has had a far from perfect foreign policy, since our founding. And there have been decades of embarrassment. There is no question about that. At the same time, we have done the right thing. It has served a public good, and we've been able to bring peace and stability and democracy to regions, which I think has been valuable for a lot of folks. So it's not, I mean, you learn from that. It's not like, well, just because the U.S. made some mistakes means we're going to double down on them. No,
Good point.
that's not how it works.
Right. A second ago, you brought up the Uyghur population and the Tibetans. And I've been noticing this basketball player that plays for the Celtics, not a Celtics fan, but I am a fan of this Enes Kanter guy. I think I've been following his tweets. This is somebody who, good on him, man.
Yeah, I don't like the Celtics. I don't like the Kentucky Wildcats. But I love this guy. He is the opposite of John Cena, basically. Which is, as you know, John Cena apologized to the Chinese government in Mandarin for calling Taiwan Taiwan, basically, and offending them. And Enes Kanter, by the way, he's wanted for arrest in his own country for speaking out about human rights abuses with the Erdogan, regime in Turkey. So he's not afraid of all of this. And so he has called out China and Xi Jinping for its abuses with Tibet, with the Uyghurs. He's called out Phil Knight of Nike for denying that this stuff occurs and offered to get him on a plane and go to China to take a look at this. And I would say, to the great credit of the Celtics, they have stood behind him and have defended his right to free speech. And the NBA has as well. And good for them. And it has come at a cost. I mean, they're not showing Celtics games in China. And U.S. government officials are now concerned about China's treatment of Enes Kanter and of the Celtics. And so this is drawing the right lesson. And athletes, I love when teams and athletes are woke, and I love when they are woke, especially if there's a financial interest at stake as well that could be lost. And so he's doing this for all the right reasons, and we should stand behind him and all be Celtics fans for at least a day or two, Rick.
No, absolutely. No, like I saw this. I'm going, love this guy. I'm going to follow him. I want to see because he's on it. He's pointing out that the shoes that people like LeBron James are out there hawking, made with basically slave labor. For me, it's finally someone bringing attention to it, and it's good stuff. But Scott, I appreciate the time as always. I appreciate it. Thanks so much, man.
All right, Rick, thanks. It's always great to be with you.
Good stuff. Our good friend Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, americanmanufacturing.org, their website. Tons of good stuff there to take a look at. I'll make sure you check out their website. Quick break, right back. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.